You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSC has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. And as always on a Thursday, it's the double-headed Dream Team edition with David Shapiro, who's somewhere in the United States. He's from Sasfin Securities, and Viv Govender from Rand Swiss, who's nowhere near Switzerland, but he's in Johannesburg. Gentlemen, good afternoon. I must apologize in advance. I've been in deep negotiations with a South African bank today. I've been talking to them for about 8 weeks since they froze my account, but the chatting and the emails, etc., reached a crescendo today. So if I'm slightly frazzled, I apologize. If I suddenly burst out in a Tourette-style tirade of abuse and profanities, I'll bleep it out. Don't worry. But goodness me, it's difficult to deal with people. It really is. You have to do it face-to-face, and I can't, of course. But anyway, Viv, can we start with the South African Reserve Bank raising the key interest rate to 7%, please? A 25 basis point, sort of almost like a preemptive strike, if you like.
Well, according to them, basically they expect us to go out of the range, quite significantly this year, and only really come back to it in a couple of years' time, effectively. So they say 2027 they're going to go to the 3% target, but they're looking at basically 4.4% this year and 3.7% starting next year. That's obviously something that where you just have to act. The way inflation targeting works, for those that don't know, is you effectively establish a reputation. It's like a person that gets into a fight, quickly initially to prevent future fights. What you do here is you try and fight inflation really strongly, no matter what the cause is initially, for the hope of preventing future inflation like COLA, cost of living allowance, spiraling happening. And so they established this new target of 3%. It's going to be well above 3%, 4.4% this year. They had to do something.
Yes, we've currently got a situation where PPI, which came out today, is at 4.8% year on year. CPI is at 4%, and interest rates are obviously above that. So it's a very interesting situation. But what I applaud about Lesetha Kanyaga is he sticks to his principles. He's not going to say, oh, well, the war will be over and it'll come down again, so we shouldn't cut interest rates. The economy can't stand it. He sticks to his guns. And I would say, well done to him on that front. David Shapiro is somewhere in the United States. Where are you, David? And first of all, how was your trip? Did you get strip searched at the airport? Was your phone taken away because of anti-Trump messages? How was it?
I actually got here pretty easily, but very, very long. It's a huge trip. What's also interesting, Lindsay, is that the airports are packed again and the airlines are packed.
Good.
People are traveling here. There's a lot of activity, and you can see it. You can see it certainly when we landed at JFK. But it was pretty easy. The weather's lovely here. It's extremely warm, and the trees are lush. I'm going to Shakespeare in the Park tonight. My wife.
Look at you.
Anything that's free, she's queuing at the moment in the seniors line to get free tickets for
Did you say anything free? So she's not a fan of Shakespeare. She just wants to go there because the ticket's free.
But it's a beautiful – no, it's actually – it's free to the people of New York. It's a it's actually a wonderful they really go out of their way to help those who can't afford things. Because things can be expensive. But this has been a long-established tradition here. They redid the theater. It's in the middle of Center Park, and it's beautiful. It's it's a brand new theater, and they give Shakespeare free. So it's called Shakespeare in the Park. So tonight it's Romeo and Juliet. Yeah, she's sitting with all the old timers. Over 65 there who bring their little seats, and they sit on their seats and waiting for a queue, which can go on for, it extends. So.
Okay, thanks very much for that entertainment here. Now update, David. What about the mood? Is there a groundswell of anarchy coming, anti-Trumpism? What's going on?
No, it's, that's what's so ironical, because I watch the local news, it's not the business news and that, and most of the issues are very tame. more, a lot about housing, a lot about the mayor's policy, a lot about just general traffic and issues like that. He hasn't made the headlines at all. And it's quite remarkable. So it's almost peaceful at the moment. And I don't know whether it's summer or what it is. I've only been here a day or two, so I can't really comment, but I haven't seen any, you know, outbursts or outcries or anything like that. So yeah. It just seems to be summer. Okay, let's put things on hold, kind of that story.
Yeah.
I wonder if he's not tiring. Do you know what I mean? You know, just before we got on air, when you were talking to Viv about, you know, about this proposed deal, I think he's just tired. You know, I think he's worn himself out. And
well, Viv can tell us. Let's stop you there, David, because Viv can tell us what he told both of us just before we went on air. Viv, you've come up with a social media post from Trump which hit the airwaves just before we came on air. What does it say?
Yeah, so basically, if you look at what Trump is talking about now, he's basically had a statement that came out that kind of indicates that he might be willing to let Iran keep the or be involved in the disposal of the nuclear material. Now, how would that – what would it work there, and what would be the thing? So if you look at how this stuff works, basically, once you get to about 90% nuclear enrichment, it's basically trivial to make a bomb. It's not that hard to make a bomb. It's like any advanced economy or semi-advanced economy with an industrial base can make a bomb. But it's getting your enrichment, you know, from like basically like 2% up to like that 90% level. But if you basically reduce your enrichment, say, from 60% down to 3%, you know, it becomes a lot more difficult. No, not impossible. It basically just adds a bit of time onto it. And what seems to be the idea here is that, you know, if you look at what Trump is saying here by mentioning that, you know, Iran could be involved in the possible disposal of the stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe that's indicating that he might be willing to let some of the material remain in Iran, just, you know, basically downgraded and monitored by international sources. In that scenario, what happens is, let's say there's another flare-up, Iran kicks out those international sources, takes the material, starts enriching again, and they're on track to make a bomb again. And I think that is something, I think that has been a much worse deal, rather, for the U.S. than what Obama had, where the stuff was really taken out of the country.
Very interesting. And David was talking about him being tired of it all. And I watched him last night in that televised cabinet meeting. And he was slumped forward. His eyes are so puffy. He couldn't see out of them. And he was battling to stay awake when other people talked. In fact, he had to lean forward in order to stay awake. I think they've told him, don't lean back in your chair, Mr. President, because you nod off. Because that's been the pattern recently. But he also got things mixed up. He started talking about the war with Venezuela. And he went on about the Venezuelan Navy being at the bottom of the sea and everything. So he's becoming even more forgetful. Mm. So, David, you could be right. Into summer, 80th birthday. Yeah. Maybe he's bored with Iran. Mm. We know that. But the market's reaction to this hasn't. If that is the case, Viv, that he is sort of getting fed up and giving them a little bit of what they want, the market's not really reacting that much to it that I can see. But Viv, I'm just going to stay with you for a bit because we're going to get back to our traditional subjects that we cover on a Thursday. I think it's time that somebody did it, and you're going to be the one, Viv. It's about time that the Pope got back in his box. Let's do some Pope bashing, because he's now having a go at AI. Viv, what did you make of his comments?
Look, I mean, the thing with AI is that, I mean, I'm not as anti-Pope as you are.
I'm not anti-Pope at all.
but look, I mean, do you remember a guy named Andrew Yang? He ran for the presidency of the U.S., not the last time, but the one before that. Basically, this was a Chinese-American gentleman who talked about a universal basic income. And that is the kind of stuff that we need to start thinking about going forward. If you're going to have a disruption to the global economy like we expect, you know, AI to do, we need to kind of almost change the social contract in a way. And that's the kind of stuff that's really in the wheelhouse of things like, you know, popes and other religious figures.
Yes.
Because we are going to have a situation where, you know, we already are seeing it. The unemployment rate is rising up for young people. We are seeing the amount of spending happening globally, et cetera. It's going to have a massive economic effect in the next 5 years, maybe 10 years at max. Massive unemployment, massive disruption to global economies. And unless we have some kind of real redress mechanism involved here to try and, you know, change, you know, outcomes beyond what the market allows, you're going to have lots of people that were, you know, pretty secure, suddenly unemployed and in quite a bad situation. And then, of course, we don't have to talk about the fact that AI is going to change, you know, military warfare, military tactics, military capabilities. And we've seen that happen in Russia and Ukraine over the last months. We've seen that happen in, for instance, even the current Iran war. These are all things, you know, war, killing of people, social, situations, even, you know, things such as, for instance, the, sad to say, the emergence of AI companions and so on. That's really in the wheelhouse of religious thought. And I think that's something to be looked at. And at someone like the Pope and other, you know, I would say spiritual, religious, philosophical figures, we need to start intervening here because we're going to have these really complicated questions to answer.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. David, can you weigh in on that? Well, it doesn't matter what anyone says about AI. It's not stopping. It's not going anywhere. It's a juggernaut.
That's my view. I don't think you can hold back on progress. This is progress. And how you control it is no one can know at this stage. But I think to actually have a universal approach to it, I don't think it's going to happen. This is highly competitive, and we can see that between the US and China in terms of sharing technology. And it's like the space race that we had in the 60s between America and Russia.
Yeah.
And no one's going to concede and say, let's do it together, you know, for the peace on Earth, and let's try open up Mars and so on. Not going to happen. And America by nature, the whole, their DNA, you know, their whole approach to life is very competitive, very aggressive. And I don't see it happening. I as long as they've got the edge at this stage, it doesn't mean they're going to always have it. But I mean, as long as they're bounding ahead, you know, with the kind of companies that they've got, I can't see any concessions. And, no matter what the Pope says, yes, from a religious point of view, I mean, this just fits in with their mandate, but no. America, you know, America for Americans kind of thing. Let's just, and as Viv has said in previous programs, I think as long as they do this, they're going to attract people from the rest of the world who can't make it in their country, going to come here. And for those nations, Lindsay, for those nations who are behind, whew, there's a big catch up.
Yes, very much so.
There's a massive
catch-up. And we've spoken about this on the program before. The African continent might be falling behind and not getting the full benefits of AI. Hopefully, there can be initiatives that stop that. And just for anyone that is Catholic that's listening, I'm certainly not anti-Pope. I was just trying to goad Viv into dissecting what he said about AI. There's one thing I am anti, though, and that's the word trillion. Now, I've heard it in three cases. I think it's three times. Okay, micron. Viv, congratulations on Micron. You were talking about it a couple of months ago, three, 4 months ago, actually. And you said, Micron, but don't talk about these stocks, chaps. You said, look at Micron. Look what it's done. That passed the magic trillion capitalization mark this week. What else have we got that's a trillion? We've got, three things. We've got SpaceX coming in at a trillion probably sometime next month, potentially the IPO. And the third trillion is the potential for the man Musk to become a trillionaire. Now, I'm old fashioned. I find anyone with a trillion who has $1 trillion, even if it's only on paper, I find it vulgar and I think it's morally wrong. Now, this is where I have to turn over to, let's turn over to Viv because I introduced the Micron theme. What a story that is, Viv.
Oh, yeah. Look, I mean, it's the biggest holding I have at the moment. So I've really ridden this up. It wasn't the biggest when I bought it, but it's run so well. It's the biggest holding I have at the moment in my portfolio. But yeah, looking at Micron and, you know, just looking at the valuation, it still doesn't seem overvalued, unfortunately, for me, because I need to cut this thing because it's such a big part of my portfolio. But really, yeah, it's done really well. The thing with the $1 trillion valuation for Musk is that I don't mind somebody like Musk making $1 trillion because he's creating value in the world. He's creating SpaceX. He's creating, you know, Tesla. He's creating, for whatever you want to say, X, that still is doing something. What I don't like is people that make trillions either by, you know, inheriting money, you know, with property, you know, just basically managing, you know, like, you know, unproductive assets.
Yes.
That's the kind of stuff the world really doesn't need. If somebody makes $1 trillion basically fairly in the marketplace by adding value to the world, so if Musk is worth $1 trillion, his companies are worth more than 10 times that. So he's taking a piece of what he's created in the world. I don't mind that. I don't like people, even to a certain extent, like, you know, people that make money out of resources, because, you know, that kind of money out of resources, because resources are just natural endowments. You know, you basically are using what should belong to the entire country effectively, and you're taking super profits on that. I don't think that's great. You create a company that basically puts 90% of the stuff into space. You're worth it. You start the EV revolution. That's fine. You basically go off and, you know, and Twitter is a much more, you know, mixed bag there. But, you know, if you have a valuation Twitter that's valuable, that's fair. So I don't mind that. But with regards to the $1 trillion valuation for SpaceX, I think it's closer to $2 trillion at the moment. Mm. And that is the kind of value that people are talking about right now. In fact, we're likely to have three companies with a $1 trillion valuation IPOing in the next year or so. That's going to be SpaceX, OpenAI, and Anthropic. And these are all, I think, companies that are either going to be $1 trillion plus or almost $1 trillion.
Vivian, Aviv, I want to bring up something that might be happening. And just for a comment, I've got no substantiation for this at all. But, you know, looking at the market on an ongoing basis, just trying to pick up why certain companies are coming down, why nothing's happened. Are investors, institutions, creating the opening, you know, to take up SpaceX, Anthropic, OpenAI? These are big, big asks. And if you're running a portfolio, and even your portfolio, you know, if you said, hold on, I want to make room to take up some SpaceX or whatever it is, even if it's a, you know, decent allocation, you've got to get rid of something. And, you know, could it be your Microns, your NVIDIAs, companies like that that have run hard? Because that's the normal way that people do it. You know, they say, or they tend to sell their winners rather than their losers in the hope that the losers will catch up. And I wonder if this is not having an impact on market sentiment at the moment, just creating liquidity to take up this deal.
I think that has to be the case. I think, look, I mean, you're going to have, like I said, two probably, because OpenAI and SpaceX are pretty related. Anthropic is not that far away, I think. But I don't think Anthropic, you know, really needs it, because their founders and their mission, that's one of the advantages that Dario has. It's that the people think he's on a mission and he doesn't have to act. It's kind of like how Tesla was, you know, initially, when he could do things that other companies couldn't do because people thought they were working for a mission, also making him, you know, billions of dollars, you know what I mean? And Dario has that. I don't think OpenAI, I don't think, you know, SpaceX has that. People want their money. But yeah, look, I think people will have to, like, you know, clear up some space to try and get these multi-trillion-dollar companies under the belt. And look, quite frankly, they have to. I mean, the idea that you're going to be, you know, investing in a modern portfolio right now, not have SpaceX and not have Anthropic and not have OpenAI in your portfolio to some extent is going to be quite difficult. It's not like having Naspers in a South African portfolio. It's quite a big, decision to be making.
But even your passive funds, those that are just tracking the index, have to do the same thing, or the index has to do it. You know, you're going to have to make space. Therefore, you've got to downweight certain of the other holdings.
Do they go straight into the NASDAQ? I mean, it's a NASDAQ listing, one would imagine, David, as and Viv, SpaceX and Anthropic and OpenAI, et cetera. They'll go straight into the NASDAQ. Mm. Is that correct? It's skews the index, and then the passive funds, as David says, have to take a chunk of that, unless they've got money sitting on the sidelines, and then unless they've got money coming in the previous month to put in into that, which is highly unlikely, not at those sort of levels. Yeah, then yes, you're quite right, David. They have to say, right, chaps, what do we get rid of?
I couldn't weigh it up. I couldn't why there was this
good
selling of some very good businesses. You know, I'm looking at NVIDIA now, which is down to 212, having been 235 after spectacular results. And I'll say, you know, what's forcing the selling? Now, we can make up stories. You know, I mean, analysts can go back and start saying, oh, this, you know, the probability of them continuing and so on, and the margins and this and so on, competition. But that's not driving the markets. There's something else. And in my own way, Lindsay, it could work on gold as well. You know, it could work on precious metals. Don't think that those are central banks only buying. A lot of people have made a lot of money out of gold and could also say, okay, let's take some profits here and so on. But I couldn't reconcile some of the weakness with the headlines.
If you look at NVIDIA, I think there's a lot to do with AMD. AMD is up 60%+ in the last month. And I think that's one of the things that's happening there, that people, if you are looking at directly at NVIDIA, I would say AMD is what's really been taking the thing. I mean, NVIDIA, AMD basically is a $850 billion company, of course, not quite as much as, you know, NVIDIA, but to be up 60-something%, that's hundreds of billions that have effectively increased in valuation. And this is in the last 30 days. So I think if you're looking at what could be explained, the NVIDIA pullback, I mean, I think it's a question of like AMD taking a lot of that. Looking at Micron, obviously I'm talking my book and SK Hynix as well, another $1 trillion this year. In the last month, Micron is up 86%. SK Hynix, Samsung. I think what's happened here is people have looked at the NVIDIA pipeline and said, okay, NVIDIA's done well, but who are the things that they really need to continue? And they've looked at, like I said, SK Hynix, which is this South Korean memory maker as well. In the last month, it's up 77%. And this is a $1 trillion company. So we're talking three companies, even if you include Samsung in there as well, that are a trillion or more in valuation. And they're all basically in the last, like I said, month or so, up significantly. Samsung's the smallest improver, up a third in the last month. So what I've seen happen is basically people have said, okay, NVIDIA is great. Here's these multi-trillion-dollar companies that are really essential to NVIDIA's ecosystem. You know, why don't we put some money into those guys as well? Because they are really going to be taking off. AMD, I think, is to do with some of the substitution effects that are possible with NVIDIA versus AMD chips. And look, NVIDIA has great profits. It gets great profit margins. That is always going to attract competition. And I think the market's just going to say that now. Maybe put some money towards the AMD competition. Maybe put some money towards the suppliers who say, hey, if you're making 70% and you depend on my stuff, I can raise my prices.
Yeah. Okay.
No, I accept that. And I'm not challenging it. But what is happening is that they're selling, they're selling NVIDIA, they're selling the winners, the previous winners, to make space, whether it's for AMD, whether it's for Micron, whether it's for the SpaceX and so on. The liquidity is not there, and you have to create it. And that's why I think you're seeing those switches. And what Viv says makes a lot of sense. I mean, you can see it by the price performance, but it's not, you can see these switches.
And maybe once the more details come out, I think the roadshow for SpaceX, for example, starts on June the 8th. And then when people say, right, we're going to put in X, then you may see this theme develop, David. We're going to have to come back down to earth, though, David. Now, there's been if you think of the JSE, I think of Renet and I think of Telcom and I think of lots of others. They went in opposite directions yesterday. I don't know if you had settled down or could be bothered to have a look at a few of the results here. I mean, Telcom went soaring and Renet went down the pan. So I don't know if you want to comment on either of those,
because
they used to be terribly important in your life.
Yeah, not anymore. But I mean, if you look at Telcom, I think what's finally happening there is that digitization, the sale of data, and their move into that is finally offsetting the legacy issues that they had of maintaining fixed lines.
Yes.
And, fixed lines has become such a small part of their business now, but the other sides have grown to offset that. It's still a bit of a drag. There's been a lot of adjustments as well, restructuring of the company, selling properties and right sizing it. And it doesn't look bad. It looks okay. It's still not an area that I'm rushing into simply because there's so much competition. And if you've looked at MTN, if you looked at Vodacom, locally they're battling. Most of the growth is coming from outside of the country. So there's a lot of competition internally, and you've also got CelC. But I can't sneeze at those results or sneer at them. I think they're doing the right thing at Telkom.
They've it's taken a while, but they are moving into the 21st century. Viv, just a broad comment now. The discount to NAV trade, the people that bang on about, well, look at it, it's trading here, but the NAV is way up there. Renet is a company that epitomizes that sort of talk, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, most certainly. Look, I mean, we've seen, of course, you know, the massive pullback here. Quite frankly, in the current environment, you know, the fact of the matter is that you have to trust the people managing these things. You have to trust the thoughts and, like, you know, investment analysis that's been going forward by the people managing it, because effectively that's what you're buying. You're buying these guys' ideas. Yes, you may say net asset value, et cetera, in there, but also you have to think to yourself, like, this thing has a huge cash balance, which you're not going to be getting, and you need to basically see. I mean, like the stuff that Pick and Pay, where they're at that box, you're not getting that stuff. That's why it is a discount. And that is why you basically have to kind of trust, you know, to listen what they are doing. I do think that, you know, the fact of the matter is, Reinet, if you look at the performance of this particular share, I mean, in the last, what's called this year or so, it's basically flat. In the last 5 years, it's done not bad at all, like up about 70%. I do think the market is kind of like making a judicious choice here, saying that, you look, these guys obviously are doing things that are not quite, you know, up to the level we want. And we don't really, you know, want to give them too much benefit of the doubt when it comes to what they'll be able to do going forward. And I think that's kind of fair when it comes to this. If you want people to value things properly, give them the stuff to value directly.
Both of your voices changed when you talked about Renet and Telkom, respectively, to when you're talking about AI stocks. It's a very interesting, very interesting that years ago that would never have been the case. Many years ago, the markets looked like this, gentlemen. The dollar rand is unchanged at 16.25, despite the fact there was an interest rate rise from the South African Reserve Bank. The British pound against the rand 21.84, the euro rand 18.94, euro dollar has just breached 17, the dollar on the slide again. What else have we got? The gold price. It briefly had a look at 4,400 earlier on. It's rallied a bit now to 4,475, but still looks, the charts I look at, I don't know if I'm reading them the wrong way out, but they look terrible. platinum.
I think it's over. I think gold. When gold slipped from 5,300 all the way down, you know it's over. It's not going to do anything.
No, it's suffered a lot. It's done, officially from its peak, which I think was 5,625, something like that. It's where it is now. It's officially in a bear market. Platinum down nearly 1% to 1909. Palladium down 1.8% to 1387. The oil price did actually, it was up about 2.5% at one stage. And so that social media message that Viv was talking about has had an effect, because Brent is actually now unchanged on the day at $94.32 per barrel, whereas West Texas crude is $89.63, up 1%. There's a difference in the times that those markets change, hence the difference between their ups and downs prices. Copper price is up nearly 1% to, let's call it $6.37 per pound. South African 10-year bond yield in response to the Saab have fallen, it's shed 2.5 basis points. The yield has gone down to, let's call it 8.46%. The US 10-year Treasury bond yield, that's pretty, the bond market quite steady recently, last few days. The yield itself 4.46%, S&P 500 futures, a couple of hours into the session, 7,568 up 0.4%. That's the June futures, soon to become spot. The only other thing that's surprising, actually, it's getting really clobbered in the last few days, and that's Bitcoin, 72,800, down another 3.2% today. Right, David, while I give you the ups and downs on the JSE, can you possibly get the indices ready for me, the usual main indices? On the upside on the JSE today, the ones that we should note, MTN up 4.5%, Kumba Iron Ore up 2.8%, and Harmony up 1.4%. On the downside, Karoo down 7.4%, Life Healthcare a 5.5% loser, 91 Limited down 3.5%, Clicks has shed 2.75%, and Datatech 2.33%. I don't know if any of those are ex-div. Anyway, they're the prices that are prevailing on the screen. David, the closing indices, please.
Just on that, I think the rise has had an impact. Yeah. You know, you might not see it in the index. The index is only down 0.3%. But I mean, if you go through those shares that might not be able to actually move the index, you know, whether it's Life, Spar, Clicks, Pick a Pay, Fashini, all of those were starting to show some kind of form, you know, as oil started to fall. This just sets it back. I heard what Viv said about anchoring inflation, but you've got an economy that is on its knees. And, you know, to borrow money now, 10.5% or whatever it comes to with the rise, I mean, you can't survive. So I think we're seeing a lot more fallers now, a lot more losers to gainers on the market today, with a few just benefiting, I think, from, you know, those that you've mentioned. But by and large, it was actually a very weak day.
Okay. Show us with the indices, please.
So the index, so you've got the all share down 0.029% at 115.096. The mining index was up about 0.33%, 0.33. Nothing really dramatic across there. And then the rest of the market was down. Property slightly better. I've got to analyze that. You know, why with rates going up, I don't know what that means. I would have thought that property stocks come down, but nevertheless, financials under a bit of pressure. The bank index down 1.2%, and the industrial index minus about 0.25%. There again, not huge movements on our market, but still ticking downwards. I think it came as a. I know the market was expecting it, but I still think it's a bit of a shock. I thought with oil coming down that the governor would hold back, but his long-term, you know, his long-term outlook is still quite negative. So, okay. Lindsay, to just share our sentiments again, I think the JSE is under a lot of pressure, and I can't see it breaking that, you know, especially with gold coming down against what we're seeing in overseas markets.
Okay. Okay, David, okay. Your point is noted and very well made. Gentlemen, I'm going to now take advantage of the long days of summer. It doesn't get dark until around 10:15. It's about 26 degrees at 5:30 in the afternoon here. I'm going to wander up the polder, up the dike, to have a look out over the Waddenzee, which is the piece of the North Sea that is sort of sheltered from the real North Sea by a group of islands, which you can see from the top of the dike there, and it's going to be lovely. Thank you very much. A really good show. David Shapiro from Sasson Securities in New York at the moment, and Viv Govender, as always, in Johannesburg. He's from the award-winning Rand Swiss, and that was the 5 o'clock shadow. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors, and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.